This is the 24th episode.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
Every time we're going to be surprised.
Crazy.
We have Jason and Florence and I here tonight.
And the cats.
And the cats. So if you hear any purring, that's our performance review of the evening.
Or Aloysius shocking himself on my laptop.
So, we are going to talk about some of the things we've been reading in between book club podcasts. And maybe to kick that off, we can have a follow-up to the last book club, which was on Buffy.
Yeah, I just finished the last issue of the arc. Which issue is that, 19?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
I kind of felt the same way.
You know, I mean, it wasn't unenjoyable, but, you know, it wrapped up the arc, but it didn't wrap anything up.
Yeah.
You know, it told you almost nothing.
Major spoiler, it tells you how Willow dies. That's huge.
In 200
years.
Yeah,
in 200 years in the future. So basically, you know, now we know she's not going to die anytime soon.
There's the line that where she says, "Is Kennedy okay?" Buffy says that to Willow. "Is Kennedy okay?" And Willow says, "It's 200 years in the future. What do you think?" Exactly. So yes, Willow lives forever, or just thereabouts forever.
For a long time. Until the time of Frey.
It was sad that that's what Willow's looked forward to. I love Willow. Willow is wonderful. And that's her future? Her future
well,
is to be
that's her future.
A hollow shell of evil powerlessness until she gets killed by
that's
her best friend?
That's her future in that issue.
It's still sad.
I mean, how many possible futures have we seen in just about every comic book that's out there? You know,
it's true. It's like more
that,
of a comic tradition.
Frey and Dark Willow getting killed by Buffy could just be an alternate future, alternate timeline.
That would be lame.
Hello and welcome to the world of comics.
Well, and I mean, I guess I don't know this, but my understanding is that Buffy has been similar. I mean, haven't people died and come back in that?
Okay. That has consequences. It is not just some like, oh, well, just change the future, blah, blah, blah. When Buffy came back the first time, she created another Slayer. That had consequences. That, I mean, that's how faith exists.
Yeah,
and
but even if something has consequences, that doesn't mean it's still not going back on what you've already done.
There were explanations for it. The first time she came back through CPR.
Yes, there are explanations for everything.
And the second time...
You can always explain it with something.
I'm just saying. A lot of comics don't bother. It's a... Buffy holds to the rule of everything has consequences. Nothing is just like, oh, it was all a dream, or, you know, we just change the past and move on and never think about it again. It doesn't reset.
Jason's over there, probably like
posting just ignoring
on some
us
message
now, yeah.
board.
No, actually, I'm listening. I'm listening. What I'm actually doing is I'm on the library website looking at all the new trade paperbacks that are coming out and reserving the ones that I want. I learned how to search on the Minneapolis Public Library by Library of Congress number. And what you can do is you can type in the Library of Congress number, PN6728, star, so as a wild card.
Yeah.
It brings up all the ones with that Library of Congress number. Then you can sort it by ones that have been released this year. And I mean, you end up looking at a lot of the same ones over and over. But after you've looked at them a few times, you realize which ones are new.
Which ones are the new ones?
I tried to... One of the other ways you can sort it is by most recent. But for whatever reason, that screws up the search. Because, you know, it's not a perfect search system. But, like, for example, I just put on reserve Ultimate Fantastic Four, Volume 11, which it's too bad Mike's not here because he would make fun of me for doing that. But hey, I'm not paying for it. It's the library. So, yeah, that's kind of what I'm doing here as I am listening to you guys talk.
You could talk too.
I am talking. I just talked about comic books at the library. In fact, I returned a bunch of stuff at the library to the library today. I returned Astro City, The Dark Age, Volume 1.
Yeah.
Which is issues 1 through 8, I think.
I think we've read all of it so far. There isn't that much.
Yeah, well,
Kurt Busiek,
he takes a while for each issue.
Yeah.
Right. Well, Volume 1 is actually just 4 issues.
Well, this was the Dark City, or Astro City, The Dark Age premier hardcover Volume 1 that had issues 1 through 8.
Got it.
Okay.
Had the 1972 story and the 1976 or 77 story. That's good. It's really good. I like it. Although, it's kind of depressing, but the Dark Age, you know. And I returned a couple of things unread. I returned The Alcoholic by Jonathan Ames, who is an author and, I guess, an alcoholic. It's an autobiographical comic, it seems like. And I just kind of got bored with it. There's another one called My Brain is Hanging Upside Down. Another seems like it's biographical indie comic. I think we're getting into the point where everyone's doing these biographical comics. And, you know, when Alison Bechdel did Fun Home, you know, it was very good. But it's, you know, everyone puts out a memoir. Not all of them are going to be winners.
Yeah. Well, I mean, an example of Alison Bechdel, she certainly earned her chops before that point. She wasn't just thinking, everyone will be interested in me for the sake of me. You know, she had built a career and a following, and also her, you know, she had built a strong body of work that allowed her to put a tremendous amount of skill into the art and the story and the pacing, and yeah, I think that's not necessarily
the case.
She knew
how to write a comic before she wrote her autobiography.
Yep.
Well, and I think that's important for every autobiography.
Autobiography?
Autobiography.
Nice.
Would someone actually be capable of telling a compelling story?
Mm-hmm.
Not just be self-obsessed. Because really, all of us can be self-obsessed. That's what podcasts are for. Fair enough, get in your notebook for it.
This morning I took a shower. Actually, that's not true. That's a lie.
You did take a shower.
I didn't.
You're actually just filthy right now.
I am totally disgusting.
And you're dragging on your sweater.
And I picked up from the library The Umbrella Academy, The Apocalypse Suite by Gerard Way and Gabriel Ba. And I've read the first issue in it, and I like it. It seems fun.
It's totally, like, I don't know. I mean, I liked it, but I felt at the end of it, like, why did I just read this?
Well, I know that a lot of people read it for Gerard Way.
Yeah.
But I really don't know from Gerard Way.
Yeah.
Me neither.
He's a lead singer of some band. My Chemical Romance.
My Chemical Romance.
I've heard of that band. But
yeah. But I don't know. I thought it was fun. I'm interested to see where it leads. And again, from the library. Doesn't cost me anything.
Yep.
The library is a wonderful treasure trove of comics.
Yes. Yay, library.
I actually bought all those.
Did you?
Read our copies.
Oh. Well, that was silly.
Yep.
Yep.
Oh, on a slight tangent, I listened to one of the Moth podcasts this morning. With
what?
The Moth. Have you heard of that? Mm-hmm. It's storytelling. It's there are venues in New York and L.A., and sometimes traveling venues where people just stand up on stage and tell a true story. And they collect the good ones and podcast them.
Why is it called The Moth?
I don't know. But I've listened to some really interesting stories. They're usually pretty short, 15 minutes.
Didn't we listen to one by somebody famous?
Yep.
Who was it?
Neil Gaiman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So
he's pretty famous. Well, he is.
We could actually, I could have posted about it if I thought about it then. But anyway, this morning I was listening to one by Garrison Keillor, their annual fundraiser. You know, they bring more famous people in to do it. And he was talking about, as a kid, how he would ditch his swimming lessons at the YMCA in downtown Minneapolis and sneak off to the public library instead.
Nerd.
Totally. It was very charming.
I loved my swimming lessons. I also loved my going to the library.
Well, apparently in his day, you had to bicycle all the way in from the country into downtown and then jump in this cold pool naked while the teacher yelled at you.
You know, I've heard about this, that back in the day, swimming lessons, they divided up the boys, they divided up the girls, and they were done naked.
Yep.
What?
I've heard that at my old high school was the case. Yeah.
What?
I know. You can't be naked God damn it. Where?
I want to be naked.
I would have enjoyed swimming lessons so much more. Although that's not true. When I was in junior high, I did everything I could to avoid having to take a shower because I didn't want to be naked in front of the other boys.
Well, it was bad enough with swimsuits and speedos in high
school. You probably
together.
Had a giant heart on and they'd have all looked at you weird.
No. Actually, no. I never. Never happened in gym.
Just being looked at in general is difficult at that age.
It was more just, I don't know.
I remember I had a boner, like, all through junior high. Like, the entire year, I think.
You know, that
2 years.
Generally, it would have fallen off. If that was true. It would have dropped off. Priapism, I think that's called.
Priapism?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's an actual, it's a thing.
It sounds like a good name for a comic.
Priapism Comics? Yes, I'm sure. Yeah, there probably already is Priapism Comics. I'm sure they're dirty and but a lot of fun to read.
Maybe it should just be called My Cock Fell Off Because I Had a Hard-On for Too Long.
Yeah, there you go.
Just the launching pad for a whole series of other stories.
Detachable penis.
All right, what have you guys been reading?
Well, speaking of depressing comics, I've been reading The Authority.
Are you saying that losing your penis is depressing?
Well, at some point, Jason was talking about depressing comics.
Oh, okay, yes. The Authority.
I'm trying to bring us back onto that whole train of thought. I can't remember what's the arc called for The Authority. Do you remember?
Oh, let me look. I have it right here. Because I brought it in here.
Well, Marty looks that up. I'll keep talking about it. But it... oh, here it is.
Yeah. I don't know. It's not even on here.
But anyway, it's Authority. Super depressing arc.
It's
and,
like it started out being called something, and now it's not anymore. Now
yeah.
It's just The Authority again.
Yeah, I kind of want to stop getting it, actually.
No, you're dumb.
In Marty's professional opinion, I'm dumb.
No, I think it's been good. I mean, it's depressing, but that's why it's good. It's like stuff's actually happening. It's interesting.
I like dark and twisty, but this is sort of grindingly just dismal. Where I just finished issue 5 this week. But in any case, the it seems to be some sort of bigger Wildstorm event or something happened, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I mean, it seemed like we'd missed something about how this had happened, but... It's a post-apocalyptic story now, where the Authority still exists in a sort of very mangled and disabled version of themselves, and they no longer
the carriers
have.
Like crashed into London, and it's like half like superimposed over London, so like the matter is fused together or something,
mm-hmm.
And like you know there's like some small percentage of civilization still alive and they're all like struggling in different packets of, you know, non-organized humanity.
Yeah. And the sky has been blocked out by gunk, which means that the Apollo and Midnighter are separated, which is one of the saddest parts of the story, that Apollo has to stay above the atmosphere to be closer to the sun as his life-sustaining force.
Like, he can come down, but only for, like, minutes at a time, which doesn't make any sense to me. How did he ever live inside? Like, how did he live inside the carrier? It's totally ridiculous premise there.
But sad. And the Midnighter is even crankier than usual because of this.
Yeah.
And some
he's not
of the,
getting his cock sucked regularly.
Yes.
By a Superman.
There's actually like a couple of very touching scenes between them where they get to be together for moments. And
yeah. And then there's this disease where people become like super evil, like,
well,
mutants. They're not like evil, but they just become like super, super powered, like giant mutants that can't really control their powers and like destroy things. And then like their bodies, like, yeah, and then their bodies like burn up and they die. And it's highly contagious.
Yeah. So it's one of the many things for the small bands of surviving humans to fear is if the contagion breaks out, that they will become one of these and die. And they call it the Warhol syndrome because it gives you 15 minutes of power and then you flame out.
15 minutes of fame.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was awesome. It's awesome. And what's the city guy? The guy who has the power of the city? Hawksmoor. And
Jack.
He's just turned into this, like, jerk-off in this issue,
well,
anyway.
I mean, he was always sort of symbiotically linked to the city, and the city's been destroyed. And
I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
I hadn't even really considered that. So he's, like, now just this, like, decrepit, like, man, half a shell of himself.
Yeah. And, yes, he is behaving like a dick, but he's also being treated terribly by his former lover, who has just lost all respect for him.
Who's his former?
In his diminished state. Angie.
Who's Angie? Which one?
The
engineer?
The engineer, yeah.
Oh. I guess I forgot that they were lovers.
Yeah.
Or didn't know, or something. Whatever.
Anyway.
Depressing and good. I think. Like, better than the other Authority stuff we've read lately, for sure.
Well, yeah, because everything we've read lately with the Authority has just been terrible spin-offs, not by the original people.
And by that, you just mean the Lobo Authority.
And the Kev stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anyone who's listening who likes the Authority, avoid the Kev arcs. They're just ridiculously bad.
The last one wasn't as bad.
It has boobies, but that's not enough.
Nice. That's terrible.
It's terrible that it has boobs?
No, it's terrible that that's how you judge it as not that bad.
No, I don't really think it was that bad. I think, like, there were aspects of
it
that were
boobs.
More fun. I don't even remember boobs in it.
You pointed out pages to me.
I did. Okay. Clearly I was enjoying it more than I remember. All right, what else? So then the other two things we read this week, since we're doing our Married with Comics via the podcast instead of writing.
Okay.
Is The Sword, the Luna Brothers, number 13, lucky number 13, which I liked more than I've liked the last couple issues, mostly because the last couple issues had no story whatsoever, and we're all just like the fighting of, you know, the
two superpowered people. Yeah.
So this, of course, ends in a big cliffhanger. But the big reveal here is that the god of Earth is creating drugs out of Earth.
Yeah.
Because
the meth lab in his basement is him standing naked making meth out of thin air.
Yeah.
Who's doing this?
So the premise of the story, let's recap this too, since we might as well. The premise of Sword is that there are these three god-like individuals that have lived for thousands upon thousands of years, and one has the power of Earth, one has the power of water, and one has the power of air, and they have a common enemy who has also lived for thousands and thousands of years, but is supposedly just a human who had who stole a sword from them. And
a sword
that
was forged sort of in their three powers, and when it was stolen from them, is the only thing that could be used against them.
Yeah, and it can kill them and hurt them. And so it basically kept them in check for these thousands and thousands of years, because this guy was out there somewhere with the power to destroy them, and so they had to kind of keep themselves, you know, minimally, you know, active and sort of hidden, and, you know, not do things that disrupted the entire, you know, world.
Right, because left to their own devices, they want to be gods.
They would just subjugate everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and that's apparently what they had done kind of in the beginning of their reign. Or,
right, they sort of made the sword in their hubris when they were all powerful.
Yeah, and then, you know, had slaves, you know, and stuff like that. And then, so anyway, so this girl gets the sword. Her father is the one, you know, who had the sword for thousands of years, and then he died. And then she has the sword, and she basically goes on a rampage, and so far has killed one of them, as far as we know. And,
to avenge her family's death.
Yeah, to avenge her family. And specifically, well, I guess not just specifically her father, but mostly her family. But anyway, so then, so now she's confronting the second one in this issue, who is the god of Earth. But
yeah, and she found him by trailing a couple of street-level drug dealers in Mexico and
totally
managed to trace
ridiculous.
Them back to the
the source.
The source of all meth.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous, but
it was like 2 pages of investigation. And they like, hiding behind a tree, and they found him in his house.
Look at that. Yeah. Yeah, there's a nice butt shot here.
Yeah, he does have a nice butt.
But it's like line drawing. Their artistic style is kind of So
they're getting better.
I do think it's a lot better than it used to be.
They have more than one face kind. Well, maybe not.
Well, yeah.
Okay. Well, still, they're doing more with it.
Yeah.
The color is nice.
Yeah.
I think the color adds a lot of depth.
And they, I mean, their draw has been traditionally the story. I mean,
yeah.
They did Girls and Luna. And supposedly there's going to be a sequel to Luna. Or, I'm sorry, not Luna. What's the one with the Ultra?
Ultra, yeah.
There's going to be a sequel to Ultra, I think, next after this, or after they
maybe
do this.
Maybe Luna is by the Ultra Brothers.
At the same time. Luna is by the Ultra Brothers.
Have you read any of the Luna Brothers stuff?
No, I've checked out Ultra. And I returned it unread just because, you know, I had so much checked out.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
I've heard that, for whatever reason, a lot of the Luna Brothers art kind of bugs me a little bit.
Well, it all looks the same.
Well, and it's the rendering, really, that bugs me. It's the way it looks almost like a cartoon cell.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep. I know what you mean.
I don't.
It looks less like a drawing, like a comic book drawing, than a screenshot of a cartoon.
Which, by that, honestly, I think you mean they're mostly flat colors. If there are gradients, they look photoshopped. And there's just not a whole lot of detail, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's not pencil marks at all.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
It's, you know, and the line widths are all exactly the same.
Yep.
There's not a lot of black, I don't think. Like, they don't use, like, shading really much at all.
Hmm.
You know?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I could go on.
That's interesting. That helps illustrate the point. Thank you.
So, yeah, anything else to say about this?
You I have nothing to say about it.
Obviously not, Jason.
No.
My wife. Excellent.
I'm not your wife.
You're our surrogate wife. I don't know. Okay, so the third one that we both read this week was I Hate Gallant Girl, issue number 2, which we both agree was even better than issue number 1. And I think for Florence that meant it was barely passable, and for me it meant it was awesome. Actually, it was just barely better than one for me. Like, it was only better because the ending was a fun surprise. Which was
after my big criticism of the first issue is that, like, I know exactly where this is going. There's no point in reading it anymore.
Yeah.
And then it surprised me.
It totally surprised you.
So,
yeah, good. Good times.
I don't really like the style of the art, though, and I can't... I had a hard time getting past the fact that the way they've designed the costumes of the girls, like, every action shot, their boobs just look bizarre, weirdly proportioned, mangled, like, in the wrong place. Because there's a big V on their chest, so it just distorts things.
I'm not seeing that. Like, here...
I'll show you later.
You'll show me later.
Here, that's not right.
Okay, yeah, that is weird.
Like, where the V hits her breast is different in every...
Oh, yeah, it totally is. Like, her costume actually, like, changes. And her butt in this shot is just, like, a pointy thing.
Oh my god, look at her butt.
Buffy. Yeah, so... But
there, like,
yeah, very strange. Like here, like it's like she's got like this crease right down her middle. But here, like her boobs
like,
are like
the
up in her face.
Knee
it's kind of neat.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway. So
I don't know. I kind of like the art. I think it's like drawn in a very like almost sketchy style. But then like they took the sketches and actually colored them and stuff.
Well, it's sort of more comic strip-y than comic book-y.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But with some detail.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's so vastly different from the last two comics. Like, all three of these comics are, like, completely different styles.
Yes, and themes.
Yeah, and themes. Yeah, interesting. Okay, so premise of Gallant Girl. I hate Gallant Girl, since we're giving the premises of all these, as if you've never heard of a comic book in your entire life, and you're listening to this podcast.
So, the premise of I Hate Gallant Girl is that there is the role of... Gallant Girl is the foremost, most popular superheroine, and she's this mantle's been around for ages and ages, and it gets passed from one girl to another in different generations. And the girls are selected through a beauty
pageant.
Yeah.
It's not really a beauty contest. Well, it's supposed to be for the powers.
A reality show?
Well,
no, it's much more pageanty.
Yeah. And
with
so,
very old fashioned criteria.
But it turns out they really just want the most beautiful girl that looks like their image of Gallant Girl.
Right.
Which
he
is
serves
blonde
as
a bombshell
person.
Yeah. And then if you happen to have powers and are in it, you know, in the pageant, they might offer you the position of pretending to be Gallant Girl while Gallant Girl takes all the credit for
right, yeah, like he's the stunt double. So the main character woman gets, is a brunette, which apparently makes her totally unfit to be Gallant Girl. And even though she's drawn in every other way in this comic to be exactly as skinny and curvy and perky as Gallant Girl, just with brown hair instead of blonde. which my
that
my
was the thing she couldn't quite
I
get over about the first
yeah,
issue.
I can't deal with that being making the case for the the plain girl, but in any case, she's powerful and determined, and sort of has a secret sponsor on the super team of all men, who helps her sort of become
her own superhero. Yeah,
and now in the second issue, more things are afoot.
Yeah.
Maybe there's more corruption than that, even in the superhero world.
Yep, you find out he has more reason to back another superhero outside of
the establishment.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's pretty fun. I'm interested in seeing where they go with it. There's no, like, number, like, it doesn't say 2 of 5 or 8 or 4 or 2. So, if no one reads it, it'll be 2 of 5. Or 4. Probably 4. But we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah, this... Okay, so I'm looking at the cover. What is up with her knee?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It's a tumor.
Like, okay. Okay.
Yeah, it looks like a tumor.
Yeah, okay. I'm also reading, and by that I mean I just started reading before we started the podcast, and now I'm halfway through, Superman, Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow, by Alan Moore, from some year a long 86, time ago.
86, I think?
86. I will see. I will find out.
So I have already read it,
yeah.
And I really enjoyed it. We actually got that on loan from Susie while we were visiting her in Chicago.
And the reason she loaned it to us is that there's going to be a Whatever Happened to Batman,
The Dark Knight,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
Written by Neil
Not
Gaiman.
Alan Moore.
Neil Gaiman.
Okay.
So, of course, we're going to read that when it comes out.
So
and
the world will come to an end before Alan Moore writes for DC again.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Why?
I thought he had sort of equal opportunity and enemies all over the place.
Well, yeah. I mean, basically, the world will come to an end before he probably writes for a major publisher again. But particularly DC.
Why?
He wrote all this stuff for DC, and then he feels that DC had totally ruined... I don't know. It's...
complicated?
Yeah. But basically, it has to do with him feeling that his art was compromised by DC, and so he went to work for Jim Lee with America's Best Comics, which then got folded into Wildstorm,
which DC then
bought.
Oh.
Yeah, so he was not happy about that. And that's why, you know, all these Alan Moore movies don't have his name on them. Like Watchmen. Does Watchmen have his name anywhere on it? No.
No, it seemed to be his policy in general to reject any adaptation.
Well, but if a movie was made of something of his that wasn't done through DC, I think he probably would put his name on it as long as he felt he had more control.
Yeah, but the level of control he seems to want is so far beyond what's available to anyone when a movie's being made of their work.
True.
But you're right, I mean, I have no idea if he would be open to any scenario, but my impression was sort of that he would much rather grouch from the sidelines than be associated with any of these. I mean, hopefully he's still making bags of money from them, although I don't know who owns the properties.
That's true. And who knows, maybe that's a part of it.
But presumably he is making at least some amount. I mean, I have to imagine. So yeah, the premise of this is like, you know, Superman's last days. And presumably the premise of the other one is Batman's last days.
Right, and the Superman one was written at a time when they were wrapping up a ton of alternate reality Superman timelines and continuities, and this sort of signaled the end of that whole era, wrapping up all the continuity that had come before and doing a full restart of the title. So they were saying that, you know, the old Superman as you knew it is dead as of this issue. Long live Superman in the new incarnation.
Yeah, although it does pose itself in the beginning as a what if. I mean, it definitely says this is an imaginary story.
Which
about 17 times in the first page.
Which is a callback to a lot of the Superman stories of the 50s.
Hmm.
All the ones that were the ones that get made fun of so much in superdegree.com. If you've ever seen that site.
Mm-mm.
It's basically all these, it's some guy who thinks he's, you know, too clever by half, who mocks Superman being a dick on all of these comic book covers. But, I mean, that was kind of the case back in the 50s. It was, you know, him, like, saying, screw you, Lois Lane, I'm gonna go date so-and-so instead. And inside you'll find out that either A, it was a nightmare by Lois Lane, or B, it was Superman teaching Lois Lane a lesson, or it was Superman who was mind controlled, and it always started with them saying, not a hoax, not a not a dream, not an imaginary story.
Well, so one of the other precursors of this story is that in the introduction, they tell the story of how Alan Moore got the gig of writing this, because it wasn't his idea. They were shopping around for the, you know, the right writer to do this momentous story.
Death of Superman.
And apparently the person who was in charge of finding the writer had originally booked the first writer of Superman, and then it fell through for undisclosed reasons.
Booked the first writer of Superman?
Yeah.
As in Jerry Siegel?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, except I don't... It doesn't say they booked him. It says they talked to him, and he wanted to do it, and he really wanted to do it. And then there's... And it, like, leads up to this for paragraphs.
Yeah.
And then the paragraph ends with, like, but he couldn't do it for some other minuscule reason.
And so the next day, we look for someone else. Like,
yeah. It's like... Yeah.
Yeah. So, and the person basically happens to be at some convention where they're having breakfast with Alan Moore and bemoaning the fact that Jerry Siegel fell through and not knowing who they were going to pursue. And Alan Moore reached across the table and put his hands around his neck or something. It was like, if you let anyone else write the story, I will kill you.
You know, I almost kind of think that Alan Moore at that point should have said, wait for Jerry Siegel to be able to do it or something. Because, you know, I hate to think it, but I wonder if the whatever reason Jerry Siegel couldn't do it is because DC just wasn't done screwing Siegel and Schuster on stuff. Of course, now their heirs are kind of trying to screw DC. So.
Goes around, comes around.
Everyone's trying to, you know.
Screw everybody else.
It's
and why
true.
Not?
Well, I thought that Alan Moore did a very good job of this story. It felt very true to the old-timey Superman that I used to read, my dad's comics, as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it had, you know, an emotional impact and tied up a lot of loose ends. And it was very different from, I'd say, the kind of superhero titles we're seeing now. I mean, it definitely feels like a different era. It's much less cynical.
Yeah. It's probably a big callback to the Silver Age comics.
Yeah, it definitely felt like.
As opposed to the Bronze Age and Dark Age.
Well, what else do we have to talk about?
My phone, which is in the Twin Cities, and I don't have it. My phone, which I could, in theory, read comics on.
Ooh.
I'm finally getting a smartphone. I'm getting a G1. It's coming tomorrow.
Oh, I can't wait to see one.
Yep. I am amazed that no one at your work has got one, Marty.
You know, I wonder if somebody has by now and they just haven't announced it loudly. Although, yeah, I think I would know. But yeah, I mean, there were several people that said they were gonna, and I haven't seen one.
Never did.
Have not seen it. There are dozens of iPhones.
Yeah, maybe everyone just got locked into a contract.
That's right. Everyone's just screwed right now.
Well.
I like mine.
Yeah.
But I'm totally interested in seeing if anyone's out there. I'll bet there is more good stuff to come.
Well, and, you know, I mean, maybe people aren't... I haven't looked to see how well the G1s are selling. And it does make me wonder if people are kind of holding off because I know that there seemed to be a little bit of resentment for early adopters for iPhones, that it didn't take all that long and cooler iPhones kind of came out.
Well, it took over a year.
No, it wasn't that long.
Really?
There was like a better version within. You know,
there's
it wasn't.
A cheaper
yeah,
version.
It was cheaper. It wasn't better. It was the same phone for less money.
Yeah.
So. Maybe there's some of that going on.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking.
Nobody trusts.
But you already got it for cheaper.
I did.
Go you!
Got no people.
Friends in the right places.
I got friends in right places.
that a song? Or are you
yeah,
just
friends
singing?
In low places.
Okay.
You never heard that before?
I don't know. You have friends?
I know. So, I put more books on reserve while we were talking. And then I went and looked to see how many books I have on reserve right now. And, I mean, over half the ones I have for the Hennepin County Library are on order. And I don't know what's going to happen. In January, the Hennepin County and Minneapolis Public Libraries, you know what? It's not the catalogs. It's the websites are merging.
Oh.
And you are limited to 20 reserves through Minneapolis Public Library. And it seems to be unlimited number of reserves through Hennepin County.
So
but
what
in
are
January,
they
going
to do?
In January, it says that the number of reserves you can get through Minneapolis goes up to 30.
Uh-huh.
But combined between Minneapolis and Hennepin County, I probably have 30 already.
I'm surprised it's not more.
I know. I was thinking it was going to be way more.
Well, you know.
So which ones did you put on reserve just now?
Let me take a look. I put on reserve... Oh, goodness. It's going to talk amongst yourselves, because I have to...
Talk amongst
bring
yourselves.
Bring the stuff back up. Have you guys gone to see Milk yet?
No.
Oh, my God. Go see Milk. It's so good.
I
cried like five times.
Yeah, I totally want to see it.
I don't want to see a movie where I cry.
But it's good.
Yeah, I know the story. It's sad.
It is. But it's good.
Yeah.
Well, it's... Yes, but... I don't know. There's other movies that are good that I don't need to see as well.
What? What
one?
Are you saying?
There
are you battling many. About?
So, I'm reading something that is not a comic book that I have from the library, but that I believe is really good. And I'm only a third of the way through. So I really... Maybe not even a third. Maybe I'm only a fourth of the way through. So I really shouldn't be lauding its praise, but I am lauding its praise... Partly because...
You laud it, Marty.
I am lauding it. Neal Stephenson's new book, Anathema, which I personally have for years said Neal Stephenson is a wash. He's a hack. It's over. No one can edit his work. He is writing far too much, and we're reading it because... He can't write anything wrong, and his writing's golden poop. But
you just, I mean, Snow Crash is brilliant. Snow
yes.
Crash is
yes.
brilliant.
Genius.
Yes.
Genius
it
level.
Is amazing.
And everything since then has just gotten longer and longer and
well,
more and more pompous.
And you
and
also didn't like it because you didn't like Cryptonomicon because it wasn't science fiction. That was a direct quote from back when it came
okay.
out.
Yes. I did not like Cryptonomicon. One of the reasons that I did not like it was that he was getting away from science fiction.
So, one could say that you...
I now like Anathema because it is science fiction.
Ah, there we go.
But, I will also say I like it for another reason, and that is, it is... an incredibly original idea that I have not seen anywhere else. That having been said, I'm sure it has been done before. but if it has, I'd like to hear about it, because honestly, I haven't seen it. So the concept, the premise of which I'm speaking, is that in the future, in this future, or in this alternate universe, which it may be, who knows, you don't really know, it's on some other planet maybe, who knows, science and math, but broader than math, science, it has become a religion and is like a sort of a discipline that is,
something you devote your life to.
Yeah, you devote your life to this and there's like all these, you know, sort of arbitrary rules, but, you know, it's a very interesting universe that he's constructed. And that now this story is playing itself out in. And to be honest, yes, it still could use an editor. It is still extremely long. and feels like, you know, probably 2/3 of it doesn't necessarily need to be as long-winded as it is. But, yeah, very interesting. Do you know yet what you've gotten from the library?
Yes, I do. I have put on reserve The Eternals, Volumes 1 and 2. The original by Jack Kirby, not the relaunch by Neil Gaiman.
Oh.
The Incredible Hercules, Secret Invasion. And, let's see, what else? Ultimate Fantastic Four, Volume 11. Teen Titans, Year 1. And it's called Counter-X, Volume 3, X-Man. Plot, Warren Ellis, script, Warren Ellis. Some Warren Ellis X-Men story. But I don't think it's the new run of Astonishing.
Hmm. Was he supposed to do the new run of Astonishing?
He is doing the new run of Astonishing.
Yes, yeah.
Huh. I'm sure I need that at some point.
Is it over? Is he done with that yet?
No, it's ongoing.
It's still going right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, he's the one who's following Joss.
Yeah,
oh,
which
right,
was
okay.
Only like 6 months ago
right.
That Joss's last issue came out.
Yeah, but that was a while ago.
Well, you know, comics come out when they come out anymore.
Yeah.
There's no rhyme or reason. They put these schedules up. My goodness. They're
supposedly
throwing darts at calendars.
Supposedly this week, there's supposed to be another Invincible issue. That's like two or three weeks or something.
So no one gets comics out on time except for Kirkman.
Well
but he's always,
only, he's catching up.
Yeah, he's constantly apologizing.
He's like always behind.
So on another comic I just read is a one-off that Susie lent me, and it's interesting in its own right, but I'm not really sure where it came from. Like, so I'm wondering, Jason, if you know anything about the continuity this is part of, because I didn't, the main character of the issue,
I
don't recognize,
read
the whole bigger arc, I don't recognize.
The Last Will and Testament, I did read it. I thought it was kind of dumb. The characters in it, Geo-Force is a character from the 80s. He was a member of the Outsiders when Batman and the Outsiders first came out. He, his sister was Terra, who was a member of the Teen Titans, and who betrayed the Teen Titans, because she was under the control of Deathstroke. And this is Geo-Force getting his revenge upon Deathstroke. And, I don't know, it's one of these ones that, you know, was supposed to be a big deal for DC, and it just, I don't know, I didn't really think that much of it. It's supposed to be all these characters dealing with loss and stuff like that.
And the problem I had was that I just didn't recognize any of them or have any emotional resonance for their loss or his revenge or any of it.
Yeah. It's one of these ones that is heavily tied in DC continuity. It's all about...
What is happening in DC right now?
It's Final Crisis, and I'm far behind because I'm reading comics from the library.
Well, and so what... The background of this story seems to be that the sun has gone away or something, and everyone thinks that this is really it this time, and the world's going to end. And...
Yeah, why is the sun gone, Jason?
That I don't remember.
Where
probably
is the sun gone?
Probably has to do with there being a crisis.
But why?
In our world, it'll come back tomorrow. That's all that really matters.
The sun is dark. Where is it?
I don't know.
Is it on the other side of the world?
You know what? I bet someone explains all this online.
Yeah.
Go online, you'll find the Last Will and Testament.
I'm just not sure I care
annotated.
That much. I thought you could just tell me.
You think it really is that?
You know, people are putting
yes.
out all kinds of comic annotations these days. Isn't my voice sexy right now?
But you're
ovulating.
You're baby making.
We were talking earlier off podcast about how women's voices get deeper when they're ovulating. Or conversely, perhaps they get higher. We don't really know. Because apparently there were two studies, and they found the opposite to be true.
Well, but they both confirmed that there are changes, depending on a woman's fertility.
But.
Yeah.
My voice is different because I'm sick.
Yeah, perfect.
And Jason's is probably also different because he's sick.
Yes,
you're sick
true.
Too?
We're all sick.
I'm better. Finally.
Well, you were.
Yeah.
So mine
sick.
And Marty's germs mutate.
Yeah, until they, like, meet you in the middle. Of,
oh,
like,
just in time for vacation?
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, you're on a schedule. You gotta get better before we go.
Fucking yeah. Alright, we're
anyway.
Done with this bullshit. We're not talking about comics anymore.
I know, I'm looking at porn.
Okay.
Jason's looking at porn. So,
bye.
Have that.
Alright, bye everybody. Good night.
Night.